What's up, people? This is a brand new episode of the Eastern Lariat, and it's a very good honor for me today to do this show. I know you guys listened to the episode we did a few months ago, and I'm so proud to have on, again, a legend in the Japanese wrestling scene, one of the greatest media members and coverage people in all of wrestling in Japan, and obviously known in America, Mr. Fumihiko.
It's good. Hello from Tokyo.
Yes, it's so good to have you on again. You know, the last time we did the show, we talked a lot about Sumo Palace. Lots of misconceptions and amazing moments that happened there.
Okay.
Yeah, so much history we had on. It was so fun. I feel like it was so cool. So today, I wanted a different show because, your normal show with Justin Nipper, there's so much history on
there. Yeah, write that down.
Yeah, write that down.
Actually, that write that down came from Chris Jericho, Kenny Omega press conference.
Mm-hmm.
We were recording a press conference, and then Chris Jericho looked at me and said, "Write that down for me." He said, "Okay."
And see, your influence continues even into the Ring of Honor era. Now that he's the Ring of Honor champion at AEW.
Yeah, and we just did the Talk is Jericho episode. You know, Dave Meltzer and I, Chris Jericho, Talk is Jericho episode on Antonio Inoki.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, we just did that. And also my regular, the podcast, another one is a real good Pacific Rim with Jim Valley.
Oh, yes. That's an excellent show,
I still do that.
Yes, yeah, Jim Valley, like longtime person. We're friends on Twitter as well. I really respect these guys a lot, not just you, but your co-host as well, always doing things. Justin working with Noah these days.
Yeah,
you guys
and
Dave. It's like so much throughout the years, that's great to see the influence of
Japanese. You know, with the team, including yourself, that we should do this regularly, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I would love to do that. You know, I thought our show last time was awesome, and I'm so happy to do this show today because it's not like a super detailed show, like interesting topic, but more so giving the perspective to the American fans on the modern companies these days, which I always love to hear what you have to say on any kind of wrestling. We were talking about it off the air, the stuff we were watching. We still go back to 50s, 60s, 70s.
I watch that on YouTube. Yeah.
Yes. It's amazing how all of this could happen. So like you can just watch anything on there these days.
Oh, I learned so much from, classic, 60-minute title matches and, whatnot.
Yes, I absolutely agree. There's a lot you can take from it. There's a lot of stuff that you see, in the old-style matches that maybe you don't see as much in the modern era. It's so different. It's amazing how this world of wrestling...
Yeah, well, the Hardy Races, or Jack Briscoe, Dory Funk Jr.'s NWA title era, NWA title matches before Ric Flair, or when Ric Flair was young, much younger than doing the NWA world title matches, you can learn so much from it. Or old Bob Backlund, or the older Hulk Hogan in New Japan, Inoki and Hulk Hogan tag team going against people like younger Stans and all that. Learn so much from it, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. I totally agree with that. One of my favorite wrestlers is Pat O'Connor.
Pat O'Connor,
Yes, so innovative for his time and stuff that... you can still stuff, and we were actually watching, you mentioned Inoki earlier, we did the show on our Patreon, me and my normal co-host Striga, where we watched a bunch of his old matches, and one of them, the stuff he was doing with Mil Máscaras was that grappling was you could do that same stuff today and it would still be cool.
Oh, that hasn't changed. No.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing how some stuff you could see that will come over and take from there, and then some stuff you would see that maybe would get lost.
It's not just, one high spot after another, that was a point, it's a fancy part. It's still wrestling.
Yes, absolutely. And we still see stuff like that to this day with people, in Noah with Hideki Suzuki. They just had the match with Timothy Thatcher, I thought was very technical based against Kaito. In the main event just a couple of days ago. So you still see threads of people who keep that. And obviously those people are inspired by Billy Robinson and things like that.
Sure, sure. Oh, that hasn't changed. No.
Yes, absolutely. It's amazing to see that after all these years. But,
Once you lock up, the collar and elbow tie up to side headlock into hammerlock, hammerlocks to top wrist lock, the takedown to, arm lock, all these things. This is professional wrestling.
Yes, absolutely. And the styles have changed, but there's still a lot that you could take from any era, pretty much.
Not to take, but that's a basic thing you just have to do.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Yes, in the ring. And even as a fan, you can take from it, just to watch it, you know.
Yeah, that's probably why that I always insist that, you know, what you see, you know, hasn't, you know, wasn't invented in the last 20 years or so. No. I mean, the kids who were born in year 2000 or something, and, or the as you grew up, you already had the internet, you already had a, you know, iPhone and streaming, and even after internet, there was no moving image until like 10 years ago, remember?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. And I come from like a TV, and the cable TV was new, pay-per-view was new, and we were exchanging VHS videotape trading, and yeah. There are ways to watch other people's other wrestling, but now it's so easy that there's almost taking it for granted that there's everything's like accessible easily. But
but it's amazing because of the world we live in with YouTube. Like I said, we can talk about stuff to watch 60 years ago, or even if you want to watch. We were talking about it off there a little bit. Some of the stuff I used to be able to watch. And it's crazy how we can watch stuff from then, Pat O'Connor and these legendary title matches, but
then
there'll be stuff from the Dark Ages that is lost to time. Like we were talking about the Joshi people, like Azumi Hayashi.
Hyuga? Yeah, very talented. So talented.
Yeah. Yes,
and but you talked about
Their matches are a lot harder to see nowadays, so they're not easily available just because the time period was so, like you said, we always say the Dark Ages, right? With Hugh.
Yeah, and then the Dark Age, and also like around 1998, 1999, that all of a sudden this from VHS tape into DVD, it was as if overnight. Oh my gosh, you cannot use VHS, you know, VCR anymore. It's everything turned into the DVD almost overnight. Yeah.
Yes.
I still have boxes and boxes of VHS tapes. I don't know what to do about, you know.
Yes, you know, the technology has changed over the years.
Yeah, you have to digitize it, and nobody has VCR anymore, you know.
I know, you know, it's amazing, you know, nobody could have predicted. It's hard because, you know, I'm sure one day we'll be talking about YouTube as like this thing that's
something old.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Yeah. It'll be like, nobody watches that anymore. There's this new thing that has everything.
Right.
Yes, you know, I was very interested to do the show just talk about modern wrestling. You know, not a very, it's just a conversation, you know, we're just here talking. I wanted to start off with, I think we should go ahead and start off with, you know, we'll do a few companies here on today's show.
Sure.
And we'll just kind of go how it goes. But let's start with the industry leader, because New Japan right now, headed to the end of the year, obviously they have their tag league coming up, Tokyo Dome on January 4th. Big time show. They've revamped things because if you remember the last, it's always like, oh, night one, night two, night three of Wrestle Kingdom. And now they've brought it back to the original style of one show only for Wrestle Kingdom. Many American fans.
Yeah, but you have another big show day after though. You know, that right after Tokyo Dome, they have the Crash that, at the either Auto Gymnasium. It's like a, like season premiere for this next season.
Yes, yes, and New Year's Dash.
New Year's
like
Dash.
That.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, that's right.
Right now, World Tag League and Super Junior Tag League. Yeah.
Yes, both at the same time.
Ten team each, and it's like wow, this heavy, real big heavy roster on, you know, the heavyweight tag team division roster and Super Junior 10 team roster, you know, the brackets are really rich. Yeah.
Yes, that's true. And we've seen that. I think that they've kind of, when you're New Japan in their shoes, in my opinion, you can see that they're very influential to other companies. You'll see stuff that they do and maybe other companies may see that and want to do it. All Japan actually does a similar thing now with their tag league, where they also had a junior tournament in the undercard.
Well, it's a traditional that Dory Funk against Abdullah the Butcher and the Sheik. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So
it goes back 45, 46 years. Yeah.
Oh, yes. And so many legends have competed in those tag leagues over the years.
Stan Brody, Stan Hansen, Terry Gordy together, Terry Gordy and Steve Williams together, or Misawa and Kawada together, or Misawa and Kobashi together, Kobashi and Akiyama together, or Stan Hansen and Tenryu together, Stan Hansen and Toshiaki Kawada together. They created a lot of interesting teams over the years. Yeah.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I just think it was interesting that they now do the junior tournament at the same time as the
there are more junior heavyweight class wrestlers.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. So I think it was interesting how they did that. And all the companies seem to be wanting to put a focus on that. But with New Japan right now, I was wondering how, because they're in America and the Western-speaking, you know, English-speaking fan sphere, New Japan clearly is always going to be the biggest right now. You know, we never know how the future will change. But New Japan has such a big influence when it comes to the English-speaking fan base. And the other companies all have great fans as well. But New Japan has the most by far. But in Japan, how do you think that how are you feeling about the company right now? Because they had a big peak over the years. Pandemic stuff happened. And that obviously changed a lot of different things with the empty arenas and the building up to the clap crowds. And we're growing gradually. Where do you think New Japan is right now as a company? I remember before the G1, they had that interview with Kidani to where he had a lot of comments and we saw a lot of the wrestlers comment on it. You know, he was talking about the company, and now they're bringing people like Rin Narita back in and Umino returning.
Umino, yeah. Oh, yeah. He'll be in the main roster, obviously. And like lots of foreigners, too.
Oh, yes. That's
Will Ospreay is New Japan superstar.
Yeah, so that's a staple of New Japan for many years now. I think that's
and Jay White, obviously. Yeah.
Yes, that's right. The champion, he's going to be main evented against Okada against the Tokyo Dome.
Yeah, yeah.
But just overall with the company, what do you think the temperature gauge is on New Japan right now? Do you feel like they're
lost? I don't know why lots of American like internet audience feel that there was a pandemic and business nosedived. It didn't. Weird consensus coming from America that the New Japan is a business nosediving. It really wasn't.
It was rumors of their demise may have been greatly exaggerated.
Yes. And yeah, it's true that they reduced the number of shows they were running, but it, much like any other business during the pandemic, 2020, 2021, nobody worked like they used to. You know, you were staying home, you know, and they weren't running 150 shows a year or anything like that. And also they had this social distance seating where they can put people in the building, but there's every third seat you have to sit. You have the social distance. And you cannot clap, but you cannot really, you know, get up and cheer or scream or walk through the aisle and touch wrestlers. None of that was all no. But the business wasn't greatly reduced, really. I mean, it was really interesting that so many people from the States kept asking me the same question. The New Japan's business is nosediving right now, aren't they? It's like a website, about Japanese wrestling, you know, that the sources are limited sometimes. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yes. You know, you just did a show about that with Justin on Write That Down, where you were talking about the media and stuff. The coverage maybe it's very difficult between there, because there's not just distance.
Oh, there's a lot to do with social media itself, too, because there are professional journalists. There are not so professional journalists, but it will be put up in the same space, you know, and either of them or the both of them could be just as influential. Depends on how, you know, media literate you are, you know, or what you read or what you want to believe. And it's kind of like a Wild West that the internet, this kind of information gathering has been around only 20 years. It really gathered and it just changed the world. Not just wrestling, but the change the world, the way the world works. You know, the newspaper, the TV news, the network news, that what's on the internet, or the fake news, or the conspiracy theories. All together, it's all out there. You know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So in wrestling, a few very vocal, influential people, or like a so-called this, you know, like a master of Japanese wrestling or something. It just, mm-hmm. it may be accurate, may not be accurate. So you gotta learn to be your own judge. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, after all, wrestling observers like him. Meltzer can be, you know, like really be like always have like a group of people who really, Dave is the only one, you know, you read and you know, that trust. And there's like the good group of people that doesn't trust what Dave has to say. And, therefore they don't believe what Dave is saying. And it's something against it. And also, I mean, you cannot take his, you know, knowledge and experience and his own connection, you know, first-hand information away from him. I mean, he has this 40-year experience, first-hand information. He talks to promoter. He talks to wrestlers. He talks to people who were there at the building. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
A lot of people are like a second, third-hand information, but they can still type up things and put that up on the internet, and people do read it, and it gets really biased.
You know, Dave, you know, I just did a show on the Hall of Fame, which I know you are on there, talking about all kinds of people, you know, that they have, and a lot of legendary performers and things like that, and even modern performers on there. But, you know, and also I think that the world of wrestling is so interesting in general. Like, no matter who it is and who your sources are, at times I think if you report something – something may change, you know, that has nothing to do with you are accurate or not, but you may hear great information, but then not you were wrong, but maybe they changed it for some reason.
Some people put some bullshit up and they put that up on the internet on purpose.
Just
last week, there was a hoax on this, you know, the crown jewel of, you know, WWE, that the Saudi Arabia show. A day before the crown jewel, there was like the hoax information, you know, was flying around with WWE logo on it, like official release, you know, saying that the crown jewel, because of Saudi Arabia's, you know, that political condition and this and that, that the show was postponed, and that the show now it's taking place at the Orlando, Florida Performance Center. Ticket information and such. And I thought, I almost believed it, because there was a WWE logo on it, says official release. It's such a hoax, right? But people did believe it.
Oh yes, that could happen in any company. Not even just Japan, but even WWE, the industry leader in the world.
Yeah, and still crazy. And then people do read it and take it, you know, as it is. So it's almost the whole internet thing. Only what, the 20 years of history, right? So
that's true. Yeah,
it's not. It's like I grew up with print media and network television. You know, they. Not necessarily the big whole truth, but you can at least trust what's on newspaper, what's on network news, right? Mm-hmm. And the internet has no rules, you know.
True, and you know, sometimes too, you'll see maybe in Japan, a lot of times Tokyo Sports will have something up that might be just for a story. Not necessarily.
And also that you have to know that now that the Japanese media is being translated into English, Tokyo Sports is a type of tabloid that reports UFO sighting or Elvis Presley is still alive, or, you know what I'm saying? You saw Michael Jackson walking around or something. I mean, it's like some people don't know the difference between New York Post and New York Times. Some people don't know the difference between Washington Post and Washington Times. It's really deceiving, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Tokyo Sports is not really considered a big newspaper. It's still very much newsstand tabloid that cover wrestling every day. I mean, for wrestling, there's a special connection that the wrestling company feed them before they go, you know, a lot of times they feed, you know, Tokyo Sports before they go on public. So usually Tokyo Sports is the first one to report anything. because they got the, you know, special connection with the wrestling company. But besides that, you always have to read both Tokyo Sports and Weekly Pro Wrestling.
Then,
then they both media, both magazine and the Tokyo Sports News tabloid, they both reported it. Therefore, it must be right, you know.
And we can see their influence even in the modern day Stardom Tag League with the team of We Love Tokyo Sports, the team.
And also, what's deceiving is Yahoo, not the Yahoo News in the English speaking world, but the Yahoo Japan.
Yeah.
Yahoo Japan picks up news from other sources, other media, and put that up on Yahoo Japan. Therefore, what's on it is not necessarily true. Sometimes they just go ahead and do it, you know?
Oh, yeah, that one, you see some really random stuff. Like, with Tokyo Sports, it's more like, sometimes they'll say stuff, maybe the company, it's more like a storyline.
And they never deviate from the wrestling company storylines.
But sometimes English-speaking fans won't be able to understand. They'll think it's real, you know. It's like some of the things they say down there. But with Yahoo.
Yeah, so finally, there are people who's translating Tokyo Sports, but you got to be careful. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
Yes, absolutely. Japanese language and English language are so different.
Also, Google Translate doesn't quite translate sometimes.
Well, not that great.
That's why we were saying, like, it's still wild west, you know?
That's a great discussion. Listen to write that down. You and Justin had a good discussion on this subject.
We're confused sometimes, you know?
I know, that's what I was saying when you were talking about Meltzer. It's like, even if you're a great reporter and you do great things, sometimes things will get lost.
And because somebody who read and translated what was on Tokyo Dome and come right back at me and saying, you know, my source is saying this, you know, is that true? It's like, where did you get this? Like, oh, what was on Tokyo Sports and being translated, go around halfway around the world and came back, you know, five hours later. It's like, oh, wow, something must have lost in translation, right?
Yes.
That really do happen.
Yeah. Oh, yes, absolutely. Like, you of all people would know this, like, more than anyone, because you're so...
Yeah, but at the beginning of the internet era, it's like, you know, somebody falsely, you know, said there was like a... Before social media, there was such thing called threads, right? Threads.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like, okay, let's say, for instance, it's nothing serious, but there was a rumor that Scott Steiner died or something, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then 5 hours later, I came back to, is that true that the source says it's from Japan? Like, where did you read this? I didn't read it, you know, kind of thing. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's impossible to know sometimes with some of these. And like you said, some people just make stuff up.
Yeah, it's bad.
But it's
getting better, but it's like that. You know, it's got to be like this for a while.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's true. Internet's still, I mean, when you think about it, it's still very young. And it's the potential.
Yeah, the whole media thing. Yeah. Yeah, but yeah. It sped up the process, you know, that the internet and streaming. Now you and I are talking over the Skype, and this is really quick. But it doesn't sometimes this, you know, communication system doesn't necessarily make it accurate either. Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But you know, in terms of New Japan, like you were saying,
Really sped up the process of a few things.
Yeah.
Because of pandemic, I think that the wrestling streaming, you know, it was going to, sooner or later, that the wrestling footage was gonna move from, the traditional television to traditional pay-per-view into internet streaming service. And what was on the streaming or the YouTube used to be all free, but now they are almost like a pay-per-view that for instance, Pro Wrestling Noah's big, you know, the Ariake show or something, that the Kiyomiya against Ken O or something, that the GHC title match, that's on streaming service. But you have to pay $40 to watch it, right? So it's the streaming on the internet is becoming your pay-per-view used to be, or more like that is turning into like house show venue, you know, like a revenue, like people actually paying $40 to watch this live streaming from, you know, Ariake Arena, the Pro Wrestling Noah show. So it's much like yesterday's pay-per-view, right? And it's, if 10,000 people, or hopefully like 100,000 people, it's as if you had 100,000 people in a building.
Ah, yes, yes, absolutely. And I get questions about that all the time, especially Stardom has had many pay-per-views this year.
Yeah, pretty often too, and that's like a, you have to pay $40 to watch the show from Hiroshima, you have to watch it from Osaka show, and there's gonna be Ariake show, that the historical New Japan and Stardom combined show, you know, that's all streaming. It's gotta be on TV Asahi days later, edited, but a lot of people want to watch it live, right?
Yeah, that's how it used to be with, like, boxing as well. There would be, it would be on pay-per-view for one, you know, and then one week later, it would be on Showtime or HBO or something.
Right.
And I remember I started telling my grandma, I was a big boxing fan at the time, but I was like, we're just going to wait until next week to watch this.
Yeah, to be on cable, at least.
Yeah, exactly. But now, it's funny because times have changed so much because they went through this different eras, and the technology is so crazy and amazing.
A new device come out just about every week. And it's going to be like this. It really is changing the whole dynamic and the economy of wrestling business. In your country too, but in Japan too. That you may not, you know, necessarily need to put the 10,000 people in that building. But if streaming service is becoming that, you know, wrestling company's vehicle, that's how it's going to be.
That's something that needs to be kept place, especially as historians. On that Observer show I told you about earlier, the Hall of Fame and all of that, we were talking about the context of maybe, you know, it's very widely talked about that, say, so-and-so wrestler is a big draw. Like, you know, he can... It's not how it used to be, though, in terms of drawing people to the stadium, and it's definitely going to change in the future. Like you said, nowadays, people, especially like WWE, they care more about TV rights than maybe who's at the building. You know, they can put anybody.
Because the Fox TV or Fox or the USA Network, they're paying some, $40 million, $50 million annual fee. That's like you can hold the company, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So they're not beholden to the, like, the days of Bob Backlund where they were trying to keep people to the arena and everything. It's totally different, so it's hard
going
to compare.
Going to Madison Square Garden, right.
Yeah.
But it will probably make the world smaller place, too, because the good number of wrestling fans from the States, if you have English commentary and English play-by-play, you want to be watching New Japan's new show, current shows. You want to be watching Pro Wrestling Noah's show. You might want to be watching All Japan Pro Wrestling show, or even DDT or Big Japan or Michinoku. Actually, we have over 50 wrestling companies just out of Tokyo. That's crazy.
Oh, yes. That's something I always say to
over 100 wrestling companies all over Japan, full time. And when you say it's a smaller independent, but none of these Japanese companies are smaller independent. See, independent company with 40, 50 wrestlers on their own, you know, own company roster, that's not really independent, right?
That's true.
You know, the Michinoku Pro Wrestling with 25 wrestlers on under contract, they run good 100 shows a year. That's full-time company. Big Japan, it's like DDT, you know, I'm not exactly the biggest fan of DDT, but they have 55 wrestlers under contract, full-time, running three different companies, Tokyo Joshi, Ganbaru Pro, and DDT, and this and that, you know, this four companies under same umbrella. And also, it's all owned by a bigger company, platform called Cyber Fight, right? That's like under ABEMA TV, it's all streaming on the internet, you know, moving image that you have to pay to watch these, you know, the big shows. It's the structure of business has changed, or changing rapidly, I should say.
Yes, and that's an interesting thing. We're going to look back at this era, you know, and see how things play out 10, 20 years from now. Think of where we were at 10 years ago, how things changed for every company, you know, from 2012 to now, everything's so different than it ever was
before. Yeah. So it's 20 years. Because when you think about it, 9/11 was 21 years ago, though, already.
Oh, yes, that's true. That's even in, and that's a great point. You know, even in life, never mind just wrestling, since
yeah, the years, yeah. So it's like a 5 years, like a big, long time. But I didn't think 9/11 was all that long ago, but it's really 21 years ago. And today's kids don't remember that as a real, real experience.
Oh, yes. Even yeah. I was a small child when that happened.
Yeah, but you do remember that, yeah.
Yes, I definitely remember it, yeah. For sure. Yes, I was definitely there. And I think my feeling is maybe the year 2000 was such a big turning point, I think, for the world.
Of course. In 21st century, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and I think everything changed. And obviously 9/11 had so many effects.
Sure. It changed the world forever. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like I, in ways I couldn't even comprehend. You know, my wrestling mind is not big enough to comprehend.
But the Dark Age is, I mean, at the end of the 20th century into 21st century, all the mystery to be solved, right?
Oh yeah.
Was when in Japanese wrestling community, that as a business as a whole, there was a big, huge MMA company like Pride and K1 and Inoki Bombaye and all these, you know, big, huge MMA company, it really almost killed wrestling business in Japan.
Oh, yes, you know? Yes.
You know, how serious wrestling has been in Japan all through the 60s and 70s and 80s and 90s. Wrestling was the total MMA sort of like in people's mind, you know. When the real MMA started and the people like Nobuhiko Takada losing to Hickson Gracie twice at the Tokyo, you got to start scratching your head. Wasn't wrestling the greatest thing? And the people like Kendo, you know, that Kendo Kashin or Manabu Nakanishi or Yuji Nagata, that the college champion turned IWGP champions, they went into Pride, they went into K1 MMA losing it, right?
Yes, that's right.
UFC's, you know, huge guy like Fedor Emelianenko, right? They had matches, you know, this is a crazy idea, Yuji Nagata against Miyoko Krakop, Yuji Nagata against, you know, Fedor Emelianenko, and Yuji Nagata, New Japan's superstar wrestler, they had to go into the MMA fight with, 2 days training. Of course you lose.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. That's one of the craziest decisions I can remember.
Yeah, then also Antonio Inoki sided with MMA people at the time, too. That didn't help.
Oh, yes. That definitely led to the Dark Ages. We were talking about it off the air again with the Joshi stuff, and that's when even Azenjo, All Japan Women, closed
down. They went down. Well, they lasted for 45 years, but finally went down. I mean, closed their shop at the 2005 or so. Yeah, but
Somehow New Japan makes it through all this. And now, like you were saying earlier, business doing good right now. Do you feel like that the fan base...
New Japan made it through. That's yes and no, though, because the New Japan Pro Wrestling, today's New Japan Pro Wrestling isn't exactly Antonio Inoki's New Japan Pro Wrestling. The company was sold to, you know, the game company.
Yeah, Yuke's.
Now the Yuke's, there was a Yuke's era, and the Yuke's also sold to the Bushiroad, today's owner. That the same Lion, King of Sports, Strong Style logo, New Japan Pro Wrestling, you know, this is the same logo, same company, but actually what's in it is all different. You know, they're run by different people, run by different money, you know? Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And nowadays.
Also, there was a Dark Age. We had to wait until the rise of people like, Hiroshi Tanahashi and Shinsuke Nakamura and, you know, Katsuyori Shibata, all these new superstars. We had to wait for them to come up.
Yes, that is absolutely true. And it led to the new era where you have your Okadas and then you see Naito.
Naito, of course. And Kenny Omega, the Jay White, all new guys, yeah.
Yes, and where do you think that the company is right now? Just you covering it, you as a viewer, what's your excitement
for it? New Japan is the biggest, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's very obvious. Do you feel like they're in a good spot heading into 2023? Do you think they have a chance to
definitely,
have a big year?
Definitely. Like you said, Ren Narita, that Umino, that a couple more guys working New Japan Strong Show in California, they're all coming back. And it's all main event roster now. I mean, like a main event cluster. And the whole new guys. It's like Hiroshi Tanahashi turning into more of a Shawn Michaels, Triple H. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah, that Tanahashi will be working full time, but he's just as good as he was 10 years ago, but he would not insist being on the main event. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yes. I respect that man so much.
I mean, such a team player that he would be in seventh match and probably willing to put new superstar over, right?
Oh, yes. And we've seen that already, even years ago. Yeah. He put over Tama Tonga even before this recent one.
right. Recently, yeah.
Yeah. Yes. So Tanahashi, like, amazing talent to me. Like, all-time legend.
Right. He's like a very exception. And also, if you remember the original Three Musketeers of 90s, Keiji Muto, Masa Chono, and Shinya Hashimoto, right? That's original Three Musketeers, Hashimoto, Muto, and Chono. Oh, Hashimoto's dead, Chono's basically retired, Keiji Muto is going through this big retirement tour right now. And there was another Three Musketeers, Hiroshi Tanahashi, Shinsuke Nakamura, and Katsuyori Shibata. They all found their own destiny and they all went a separate way. For Nakamura's case, Nakamura packed up and left the country and he went to WWE and he's been with WWE the last 6-7 years. Katsuyori Shibata went to MMA and then came back. And Tanahashi stayed with New Japan and saved the company.
Yes. A very legendary figure in the company for sure.
Everybody had their own path. You know, very much legendary figure. Now you have, like you said, Naito, Okada, Jay White, Will Ospreay, now Umino, Ren Narita. Narita is obviously Katsuyori Shibata's disciple, you know?
Oh, yes. Amazing. He's somebody I really was a big fan of as a young lion. I really saw a lot of potential in him, and he definitely looks like he's on the verge of capitalizing on it. I just wonder, because you mentioned the business, and this is something I've been thinking about for a long time. It feels like lately, business-wise or anything, it feels like they're doing a lot of different things right now that maybe you wouldn't see, because I feel like New Japan, as just a company following it, they have their way, and it's very traditional of what they want to do. They do the same things a lot, you know, over the years. And now we're seeing some different things, like with this TV title, new guys coming back. It feels like we're on the cusp of a change in the company from where it's been in the last few years.
More TV influence, though, because the New Japan TV title is created by TV Asahi, and it's at the focal point of your New Japan world. That the streaming service, they're looking at the televisions, you know, like a regular TV show on TV Asahi and their affiliate, and they're looking at another market, the streaming service, the New Japan World, as another, you know, completely different platform. Then there's house shows, like three different, you know, cluster or something, and the newly crowned New Japan TV title is catered for New Japan World.
So, do you think that it's good, though, to have this different title with different rules and that, you know, as
I don't know. I don't know. Because if you're 15 years old or 20 years old or 25 years old, you know, they're looking at the world much different from how I'm looking at the world. You know?
Oh, that's true. But even just as a fan, do you think that the matches – remember earlier in that interview, Kidani had talked about the matches maybe
15 minutes. Yeah. Because today's, you know, internet audience have such a short, you know, attention span. Is that it?
And not just that, but I think that it's actually good to have different style of matches. Even in the old days, I remember there were matches that, you know, especially maybe in shoot style, where it could end at any time. But in New Japan, it always goes 30 minutes a lot of the times, you know, in their big main events. So now you have this new title.
Yeah, this New Japan TV title won't be, you know, involving Okada or Jay White or Tanahashi or anybody like that. It's more of like a little bit above New Lion. I mean, Young Lions. See, Young Lion is a, you know, like a, your black trunks and black boots, no gimmick, just straight wrestler. That's your rookies, right?
Yes, like Kosei Fujita right now, Young Lion.
Yeah, then there's a promising prospect in the Golden Guys who will be star, you know, in Next Generation, will be sent to America for excursion. And when they come back, like Narita and Umino, there will be main event. Much like what happened with Okada 10 years ago, remember?
Yes, and that changed the company.
So this New Japan TV title would be a vehicle for New Japan World streaming platform audience, I think.
Yes, and I think
evidently, though, because when you see YouTube and see how long is this footage is, and on YouTube, the longest that the footage people can stand watching is about 10 minutes max.
That's a good point there.
Yeah, YouTube, it's got to be 5 minutes, or they'll skip it. You know what I'm saying?
No, I totally get what you're saying. I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, New Japan World, like a small clip and the smaller version of things. Like, people don't sit and watch 45-minute match on that.
That's true.
Yeah.
And I think, like I said, that they're doing a different thing. And another different thing is another title is the women's title. We talked a little bit about this.
Completely Kidani's idea, though.
Yeah, that's what we were talking about it on there. I said if you listen to my old episode, I said that.
Stardom did not ask for it. Mm-hmm. It's not really Rossi Ogawa's idea, no, not at all. But it's not even New Japan's idea. It's more of a Kidani and how he looks at the wrestling business.
Yes, and I said that on a prior episode, and we were even talking about it off the air. Where I think a lot of people don't quite grasp that Joshi Pro Wrestling is so different in the years that it's grown.
I've been saying this over and over, and I'm going to say it again, that the women's wrestling in Japan was never, never part of men's wrestling. Mm-hmm. That's the bottom line thing, that the women's wrestling goes back older than New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Yep.
You know,
that's right.
There was a war, right? There was a war. You know, there's a real history lesson. Yeah. You know, there was 1941, there was a Pearl Harbor, and there's 1945, there was Hiroshima and Nagasaki. 1948, they already had women's wrestling in Japan, in Tokyo, even before Rikki Dozan.
Yeah, see, that's something a lot of people don't talk about, that era. There.
And also, Rikki Dozan's era, the JWP, Nippon Pro Wrestling, sort of resented the women's wrestling because they came from sumo wrestling world.
Yes, and that's what we were talking about, that the way that they were brought in was so different. It's impossible.
Women's company always operated was women's wrestling only.
You know, I was talking to a friend of mine in Japan who's a big historian on especially Joshi Pro Wrestling.
Yeah.
I remember seeing an interview. I think Rossi Ogawa said something very similar to this. But the people who ran Zinjo, like All Japan Women, they saw wrestling more.
All Japan Women, there was a 7, 8, 9 women's wrestling company during 1950s. People don't know that.
Yes, that's
because
true.
The sports paper, all these things, they didn't cover women's wrestling, but they still ran 200 shows a year, through 50s and 60s. It's more like you're like a circus coming into your town.
That's what I was going to say. Would you say, though, that All Japan Women really changed the game for Joshi Wrestling?
Because
like popularized it?
All Japan Women in late 60s was the first women's group that got on the network channel, Channel 8.
Yeah.
Mark Fumiyake and Beauty Pair, Jackie Sato and Maki Ueda, they became so popular. They were singing in the ring and selling gimmicks before men's wrestling was selling gimmicks. Like there was no such thing as wrestling merchandise, right? But the women's wrestling were doing it all through 60s and 70s.
Isn't it interesting that, like, I was reading this on, like, the people who ran it, Matsunaga's, they were all brothers, but they
four brothers. Yeah.
They saw wrestling more as like show business, not necessarily.
But they were part of it, part of the thing. It's called the Juken, judo against boxing, more like a mixed fight, so similar to pro wrestling. Mm-hmm. It's a work, but they were running those shows simultaneously.
Yes, that's interesting as well.
And also they were also referees and trainers and chiropractors and the promoters and also married to all the older wrestlers and their family, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
Much like Tennessee's before Jarrett's, you're from Tennessee.
Yeah, that's right.
Not the Jarrett family, but there was
the
Fullers and Welches. Yeah. They got the 50 cousins and all married to each other.
Yes, I know exactly what you're saying there. That was
so women's wrestling. Yeah. All Japan's Matsunaga family was such that they had their dynasty for over 40 years.
Yes. And
it was never involved with men's wrestling. Until now, yeah. It's, all four brothers, much like Welch's and Fuller's, that they're all gone now. Okay.
Well, yeah, that's true. And yeah, just like Matsunaga's not around anymore.
None of them are around anymore. And Rossi Ogawa was the last Mohican that, right out of college, he started working for All Japan Pro Wrestling back in 1977. And he's been around ever since.
Yes, and with the New Japan doing this, it's a big change, departure for New Japan and Stardom and Joshi and men's wrestling both.
Now, because now it's owned by same capital, And Kidani, the president chairman, has this idea that the global standard now, he's looking at WWE, right? That the global standard, I mean, looking at the WWE, is thinking that the men's, and with buying one ticket, you should be able to watch men's wrestling and women's wrestling all at on the same show. Not knowing that the women's wrestling in Japan is just as big as men's wrestling. And it had a completely different history and completely different, you know, evolution. And the women's company always had their own 50 wrestler roster on women's company in itself.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah, if they mingle, that's fine for the special shows, but you cannot combine Stardom and New Japan. And this one show, this coming weekend, that's fine because it's called historical event.
Yeah.
But you cannot run women's company and then run men's company and put it in the same show and how many women's matches are going to be.
And that's what I was going to ask you about this, is like, is this
all,
something
all that they could have is one or two matches, right? All you need is four or five women's wrestlers in one show.
Yeah, is this something that, what's the temperature in terms of the fan base? Like, are they hyped?
Actually, it overlaps, but New Japan fan base is so much like WWE Universe.
Yeah. That's exactly what I was thinking.
Much like WWE Universe, they only watch New Japan. New Japan only. But New Japan is a big company with what, the 50 wrestlers under contract and, you know, new stars still coming up and all these things. All the storyline, their original lineups and all original calendar year, Wrestle Kingdom to your Japan Cup to, you know,
yeah.
G1 Climax to much like your SummerSlam and Survivor Series and, you know, whatnot, right? So New Japan has its calendar year. The events set. So does Stardom. You know, Cinderella tournament to, you know, that the, you know, Wonder of Women or that the World of, you know, Five Star Grand Prix, Five Star Tag Team tournament. It has a calendar year.
Yeah.
And all that the Stardom has this such a loyal fan base. Then Stardom fans watch only Stardom and don't even go to other women's group. Much like New Japan, I call it New Japan World. It's kind of like a streaming service, but much like WWE Universe, that New Japan fans only follow New Japan and don't even watch pro wrestling, don't even watch All Japan Pro Wrestling, don't even watch other companies. Big Japan has its, you know, strong, loyal fan base. Yeah. That All Japan, traditional, All Japan has their strong, like a really loyal fan base too. So they, the hardcore watch everything, but each company has its own, you know, loyal fan base.
Oh yeah.
That's what I'm trying to get. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's been very clear, over the years.
And New Japan is the biggest.
Okay? Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Most commercial. Yeah.
Yeah, and great promotional tactics with Bushiroad, I think, has really helped. Like, Kidani, say what you want about him, but his business acumen is so strong with New Japan. And I just wonder, you know.
And it's the only company that can run Tokyo Dome shows. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true, you know. And
it does G1 Climax. It's like a big deal show every summer. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's something about this. And I'll kind of wrap up New Japan like this. You know, we're talking about these different things they're doing, the TV title, the women's title. Going into the next year, you get this big dome show. Okada, I personally think Okada will win the title and have a crowning moment at the Dome.
From Jay White?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's my prediction on that. And we may see a big new year for New Japan with all this new style and just the company. What do you see for the immediate future for New Japan 2023? We're at the end of the year now. I'd say it's been a pretty good year for New Japan overall.
Yeah, pretty good year, but not drastic, big, huge change.
Yeah.
You will see Ren Narita or the, you know, Umino as a new challenger for the title, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And do you think that, you know, because we're just talking about stuff, and who knows what could happen in even 6 months? Everything could change from, you know, wildly different. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the landscape of New Japan, you see Okada now. Is there somebody that you think, because we talk about some of these new stars, is there anybody in your mind, just as a viewer, do you think that, hey, this guy could be the next guy? Because we've seen Okada, we've seen Naito, these guys are getting older in years, and it feels like they need to have a new guy come up.
Umino is good, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. You think Umino, and obviously his dad as the referee is going to give him a great recognition.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, you think even doesn't in the
make,
company?
No, it doesn't make much difference.
Ah, okay.
They don't even acknowledge him.
Ah, yes, that's true. Oh, yeah, because he has a different name too, even Red Shoes.
Uno and Red Shoes. You know, the Red Shoes Uno come from, if you remember, Red Shoes Duggan from LA, you know, historical referee.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a legendary figure from America. It's if you follow wrestling from 50 years back, Red Shoes Duggan from America, you know, like doing referee for Inoki against Bob Backlund, Inoki against this and that. He was a special referee. So Red Shoes means great referee. So Uno got the name from him, and not necessarily that. I don't think the Red Shoes even gonna referee his own son's match.
Oh yeah, that's true. That'll be interesting. So
completely separate. It just help or doesn't help. It almost doesn't make any difference.
Maybe not that big of a difference after all.
Oh no, not at all.
Treat
individual as individual star.
And I think that's the proper way to go about it for everybody involved, to be honest.
Guys, no favoring, nothing. No.
Exactly.
Umino is so talented, and now he looks with the new costume and long hair and good looking guy. That guy looks like superstar written all over him already.
And I think we're seeing that, you know, we talked about the Three Musketeers and the originals, they all went their different ways. Mm. You see that Umino, like, calling back to Tanahashi and maybe Narita, maybe calling back to Shibata. It feels like we're heading towards that next era where they're going to see.
Exactly.
So I really feel like we're on the cusp of that, and we're going to see some big changes. Maybe not big changes this year, but in the near future, maybe 3 years.
Yeah, in Japanese ring, you know, it doesn't happen overnight. You know,
exactly.
Make you wait though. You know what I'm saying? If you remember that the Muto, Chono, and Hashimoto era, there were Choshu and Fujinami right in front of you.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, that's funny how the story continues, but I do think that 2023, all things considered, you think that it'll be a good year for New Japan. Things are looking up for them in 2023.
Of course. Still strong and very steady. Very steady.
That's great news, because there is a lot of worries sometimes. I mean,
I never worried.
Oh, you see, you're confident. I remember the women's title. We talked about out there. You said, you know, let's not be too negative too fast. We got to let.
You know what? Because I do have different picture. Stardom has a red belt and a white belt.
Yes, call back to Zinjo.
Yeah. Red belt is the greatest thing, and white belt, you know, it's like your Intercontinental title or U.S. title. There's like a two that's a good word, but like your prestigious biggest title is red belt and white belt. Where would this IWGP women's title will place? Above or below? Or right in between?
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
If you followed women's wrestling, you know, for a period of time, red belt is your symbol. Okay, and white belt is like a little bit different, but it's still important, Intercontinental title kind of thing. And if you created IWGP Women's title, where would you put it? You know, for women's wrestling fans' eyes, it is definitely below red belt. See, IWGP, name IWGP is New Japan and men's wrestling value orientation. Does that make sense?
Yes. I totally understand what you're saying.
Yeah, and that's Kidani looking at the IWGP title as like above everything, right?
Yes.
It doesn't sound right for women's wrestler. You know, women's wrestler themselves, the worker wrestlers themselves, looking at red belt as the greatest thing. And one wrestler from Stardom was saying that, I want to get IWGP women's title because I can defend the title at the Tokyo Dome, if that's the reason.
Yes, that could be interesting to see that. And you know, I was going to go to the other companies, but I think we should just talk about Stardom a little bit more here before we go to the other ones real quick, because they're a major company right now, Stardom. I think that's another thing people are just now catching up to.
Over 100 wrestling company in Japan. Number one is New Japan, and number two is Stardom.
That's right, and I think that's a...
Stardom is more popular than, I'm sorry, Pro Wrestling Noah.
Absolutely. Right now, I mean, that's just a factual statement. You look at the numbers, and even in pandemic, their success was so strong, they were able to grow from where before they were, even with all fans. They just continued to grow anyway. They were the one company
that sped up that, and pandemic even sped up the process of going into streaming service.
Yep.
It cost, you know, customer money to even watch this, you know. So the viewing pattern and the spending pattern has changed. You know, you could stay home and pay for it and watch streaming service.
And like you said, their audience is so loyal. They have so many pay-per-views on your BS Sky and all that stuff.
Have their own, the Stardom World, their own streaming service too, yeah.
Yeah, but the fans will buy Stardom World and then even buy the pay-per-views afterwards with everything. It's like they run so many that I just think, man, they must really have lots of people, like, or not maybe lots of people overall, but like lots of people buying these pay-per-views that just make it so profitable.
Yeah, it's supported by male audience, though.
Yeah.
Spending audience.
Yeah, much different than the old days of
The Crush Girls era. Yeah,
yeah.
The teenage girls, the dominant fan base, but all like a 90% male audience. Willing to spend money.
Yeah,
buy every merchandise. Two of them. Yeah.
Oh yeah, so that's what I'm saying. The audience fan bases are so loyal sometimes. We see that a lot, not even just in wrestling though. You look at maybe like in Western culture, maybe like K-pop group. Like the stans, they call them. They buy everything. They love everything. And you see that culture a little bit in even wrestling.
K-pop or J-pop here too.
In Japanese.
Japanese anime audience.
Oh, yes, that's true. Yeah, much.
Yeah, they buy everything, watch everything. Yeah.
Yes, I definitely know many people like that, that are big fans of those things. What would you say, this is totally irrelevant to wrestling, but I'm just going to ask anyway.
Pop culture?
Yeah, what do you think the biggest pop group is right now, like idol pop group, you know, because for a long time.
I don't know, like something 41 or 45 or something. I'm not into that. I don't know much about it, but.
Oh, yeah, the modern era music, not big fan.
I'm not a right guy.
It's okay. Like I said, you know, I don't even know myself.
I still listen to 90s rock.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that at the end of the day. But Stardom, they have the loyal fans, you know, and I think that's
real loyal fans. And strong roster, you know. You can be Utami fan, you can be Julia fan, you know, you can be coming, you know, you can be just all kinds of different faction. You know, you can be Iwatani fan, you know. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the roster is, like, so strong. To me, I think Stardom actually has the strongest roster, like, in terms of talent.
And six different factions, having, like, five, six girls in there, women in there. So it's like you are actually Queen's Quest fan or the Star fans or the Del Monte fans or, you know, it's kind of like almost like an NWO fan.
And we saw that even in New Japan really capitalized on that with, say, like,
Bullet Club fan?
Yeah, LIJ, Bullet Club, Los Ingobernables de Japón. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, like you could, like a sports team, like where you have your favorite, like, team.
Yeah, and then when you have strong faction, one guy leaves, and that's a big storyline. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, and we saw that even, remember when Momo turned on Queen's Quest and went to Oedo Tai?
Yeah, yeah. It made, just created new stuff from that.
Yeah, that Utami became the leader of Queen's Quest. But the thing with Stardom is, even if you just go down their roster, I covered every show of the 5-Star Grand Prix.
Okay.
Every wrestler, like 13 people in each block, like biggest tournament almost. But
I'm a big Shuri fan, yeah.
Oh, yeah, Shuri Kondo, amazing. I remember when she first came in. Hustle. You know, Smash, yeah.
UFC even.
Yeah, Pancrase. Yeah. UFC. She had that UFC run as well, MMA. Amazing performer, like wrestler. I think she's a wonderful champion, doing things. But I think my point on the Stardom talent wise, you could go down to maybe like the 20th ranked person in the tournament. And you'll still have a great wrestler somehow, you know.
And also singles tournament, you know, they do the unpredictable booking and champion losing in the single tournament too. And it's like, oh wow. And then you have title match. That's a different story. And it's very interesting.
Oh so yeah. Absolutely.
Very healthy, heavy roster right now. More women are coming in too from other groups.
That's something that we didn't see a lot over the years. Before the Bushiroad, things were a little bit more insular for a while to where they
Stardom is so dominant. Yeah. If you knew that there's like a 15 women's wrestling group in this country, in Japan. 15. Mm-hmm. And some of them making money, some of them are not, and a lot of them want to come in and to be signed under Stardom now.
Oh, and they've done a great job. I mean, even with their new blood.
Much like WWE, right?
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, where everybody wants to get into the big company pretty much.
Yeah, under contract, yeah.
Yeah, that just helps your whole life, you know, if you're a wrestler. But, you know, I like that they're doing different things. Again, much like in New Japan, they're doing a little bit of different things. With Stardom, they're doing these new blood shows where they'll bring in these freelancers.
Right, the rookies.
Yeah.
Right, from other companies.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you'll see people nobody had to even, and sometimes for like really small companies.
That means that the other smaller women's companies are not looking at Stardom as a competition. It's more like a big company, you know, want to be involved.
It's like the major league, you want to jump up.
Same as New Japan though, because I believe there's a couple three wrestlers coming in from other company next year.
Oh, that would be really interesting.
To New Japan, yeah.
Yeah. See, I can't wait to see who that is, these three people on there.
Yeah, two or three guys, yeah, I believe is coming in New Japan. To be like your renegade guys, you know?
Ah, that could be a hot tip, something we can look forward to going forward to. That could be a great storyline. And hey, I've always said, the interpromotional angles are the best angles.
Oh, yeah.
And that's something all the way back to the 80s.
A stimulus, though, that he has to make longevity out of that.
Yeah, that's true. Well, a lot of times that hasn't played out that well. Remember, UWFI feud was like the most hottest feud.
It didn't last.
Yeah, exactly. So they weren't able to really turn that into much. Or even like in 2000s, remember when Noah Juniors invade New Japan Juniors and they have this amazing matches? It didn't really last.
It didn't last, no.
Yeah. Yeah, you see, that's something that we have to figure out. Hopefully, they can.
Yeah, because if it's like a company, one company's going down and merging into and make it into storyline, that works. But if the other company wanted to exist, then that has to be like a win-win business.
Yeah, and well, that UWFI feud didn't have that at all. The company died because of it.
That was the last leg that they had to do it to survive. The company. And also, but then again, later on, when Nobuhiko Takada and Muto match happened, that Sakuraba, the later on MMA superstar, Sakuraba, he was in second match that night.
I know, yeah. See, that's the thing. People don't notice that he came in there. Even Takayama was a UWF guy, a UWI
right,
guy.
Right, right. Then joined All Japan.
Yeah.
Then Japan,
I didn't like that feud only because, I mean, Takada did get the title, but everyone else got jobbed out on UWFI. It was like so one-sided.
If you remember, Takada beat Muto in the second match and got the IWGP title. Nobody remembers it.
Yeah. And it's just like, it was a tough thing. You know, like you said, UWFI was going down anyway, pretty much, and all were, like you said, maybe last leg trying to survive. But I do think that they could have done more if it had been more even, you know, like if I'd had more people win besides just Takada, that one title match.
Right, but there was the conflict in a clash of style thing because UWFI was going to change wrestling. That was the whole idea. you know, make it into more like MMA. But the New Japan killed them. You know?
Yeah, yeah, I heard Choshu, because remember, Takada at one point was like, I challenge all the fake champions to come to my company. And Choshu was like, okay, I didn't like that very much. So now, yeah.
Traditional wrestling, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, see, so that was kind of like payback time, when he's like, oh, look who's come crawling here, and pretty much, and it turned out to be...
But that made Keiichi Muto even bigger star, though.
Oh, yeah, oh, absolutely, for
New Japan. And also, he was so smart that he revived old-fashioned figure four leg lock into very believable finish.
Oh, yeah, and New Japan benefited greatly from all of that. That was an amazing time for them. But
yeah, because everybody had the figure four leg lock, no big deal. But if you use that on an important match like that and make it into finish, that's believable finish.
Oh, yeah, you know, our mutual friend, Dr. Jonathan Foy, with his books, I remember you had a quote in his Muto book where you said, Muto was the, he's an influencer, you know, he'll do something one week and then everyone will do it the next
time. Oh, like a Shining Wizard?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
The day after he introduced Shining Wizards, every guy from independent company want to do it. Oh, that's a cool move, right?
Yeah, set up with the basement drop kick.
Because he couldn't fly high. Therefore, he invented the basement dropkick. And it made it look like it means something. It did mean something.
I really relate to that, because when I was wrestling, I really struggled with my dropkicks, actually. So I just cut it out. Like, entirely. I didn't do it.
If you couldn't fly like Doug Furness, don't do it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I didn't want to do a bad one, but it's like Muto, he's like, okay, I'm going to do a dropkick, but do it my own way with the basement dropkick.
Yeah, because he has such a bad knees.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But he made it to where it was like cool.
So creative. Yeah.
Yeah. But, so creative. Yeah, but with Stardom, I feel like their company is so hot right now, and from the story, like the shows, as just a fan, they're clearly building to me with Julia versus Shuri. Amazing talent, match. Great storyline too. With they were friends. Shuri won the title last year and broke off from their faction, and now.
Mm-hmm. Now God's Eye, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I like, we were talking about the people coming in. Like, someone like Mirai, to me, has become a superstar, this year from Tokyo Joshi Pro. She was an opening match wrestler. Comes to Stardom, is now main event level wrestler, and, like, such an amazing...
But not overnight, though. You have to go in front of people.
No, and, you know, remember her first match was a red belt title match against Shuri in Stardom.
Okay.
In January, and she grew from there and became this amazing. And like I said, she went from an opening talent to new clothes, like new outfit, new gear, great new gimmick with the clapping, became a great person. And it's like, that's the thing. Stardom to me has like the Midas touch almost, where everyone on the roster is so talented. You could go to the 18th ranked person and they feel like a main eventer if you want to give them a chance, pretty much.
Right. That's really all Rashi Ogawa's idea.
And he's kind of the mastermind. With Bushi Pro, Rossi Ogawa was still heavily influential in the company.
The executive producer is what it is. But it's still owned by, you know, Bushiroad Fight Company, so it's a little bit of, that struggle is there. Who is superior to who, kind of thing.
Oh, that's true.
Because the Bushiroad Fight people, they are the owner of the company, and they will, start touching the creative.
Yeah, and it's interesting, because what they've been doing, I think that they have, of everyone else, they have the most natural storyline heading into their big show of Julia and Shuri. That has a year build to it.
Sure.
Where, you know, some other companies, I mean, I'm sure Okada and Jay White will be a wonderful moment to see Okada win. But they don't have an intricate storyline where they were, they've already had matches, actually, like before, you know.
Oh, not just once, but a dozen times.
Yeah,
but then again, if you remember the G1 Climax final from last summer, Okada against Will Ospreay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that can be another program.
Yeah, and see, that would have a lot more to it in the future if they wanted to build different layers to it. But
Will Ospreay is more committed to Japanese company than Kenny Omega was.
Yes, that's true. Yes, he's been around for years now at this point with New Japan. It still feels like he's on the rise to a lot of fans.
Sure. And he grew, and he's not just doing, just spectacular moves. He's more of a wrestler now. Yeah. I mean, Will Ospreay, I'm talking about, he really made lots of progress. Of course, it's a guy out of the world athlete, but he does have this storytelling wrestling matches now.
And it's part of being a wrestler that you grow not just in moveset, but in the way you think. Maybe layout matches.
Wrestlers are for a certain environment. You know, if Ospreay went to WWE, for instance, he would be just like Ricochet, right?
Oh yes.
Yeah. So you have to be in certain place, certain environment to become certain wrestler. Yeah.
But in Stardom, I really think they're on the cusp of this Julian Shuri. I think amazing match. I feel like in my mind, this is just me, speculating my feeling on it. I feel like Julia could be somewhat similar as a champion. The impact she makes to what Okada was for New Japan, where she will be the ace of the company going forward.
Not just the ace of the company, but she probably will be singing, she probably will be doing movies, she probably will be doing other things like a breakout star.
I totally see this potential.
Kamitani too. Kamitani will be a breakout star too.
Oh yeah, she's a former idol. She was with SK,
right.
Something like that.
Right. She will be doing the musical or stage, like a play or the singing or other things. That's kind of like 70s and 80s All Japan women stars are doing.
Oh yes, and what a return to form that would be. I think that would be an amazing thing if Bushiroad has the promotional backing and the geniuses behind them to like make that happen and make it to
a match. Yeah. Because they're doing Iwatani's movie next year.
Oh yeah, they did that even on the shows. They brought like actresses in, like who will play Iwatani in the movie.
So it'd be interesting, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But I really feel like big things are ahead for Stardom of all the companies. I think they're going to be in a great spot in 2023. Do you feel like, because it's something we mentioned, you said New Japan, the only company to run the Dome. Do you think it's possible that Stardom could run a Tokyo Dome show?
Oh, that's possible. Yeah, that's possible.
Yeah,
that's of course.
I feel like they're not that far off compared to New Japan.
But it will be smart enough to make it into all-star shows, bringing all the women's company.
Just like Big Egg Universe.
I think so.
Yeah, that would be a great idea. See,
once it's almost like the stimulus that once you had a Tokyo Dome, then the Budokan show or Sumo Palace show may not be as important. You know, that's not very good business.
Yes.
Yeah, so the Stardom should be running, two or three Sumo Palace shows a year, or Yokohama Arena, or Saitama Super Arena, or, places like that. And 15 Koraken,
Yes.
The Tokyo Dome is very dangerous, If you remember 1994 All Japan Women's Tokyo Dome, that was the beginning of the end.
Absolutely. But hopefully that things could turn out good in the future for Stardom. I think big things are ahead of, like, that company, I think business-wise, has amazing run.
So much. Yeah, it's coming up. Yep.
And we'll move on to another big company. We mentioned them a couple of times now. Pro Wrestling.
And also, but we can't forget the Pro Wrestling Noah that has a big, huge potential. Right now it's Great Muta's retirement tour. They just had the Ariake, arena, and then they're gonna have January 1st, Great Muta against Shinsuke Nakamura, and then 2 weeks later, January 22nd, Yokohama Arena, AEW Sting make an appearance. Then February 22nd, Tokyo Dome, the grand final retirement tour. They're doing this, all this huge show for Great Muta's retirement, right? Keiji Muto's retirement. Then he'll be gone. So that's the very brand new era for pro wrestling in Noah. Good and bad, right?
Yes, absolutely.
But this has a potential, has English commentary and English, the broadcasting and streaming service under ABEMA TV, and they got the right platform for this era. So, and Pro Wrestling Noah has very healthy, very good, their own roster too. So.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, from a roster.
Yeah, Pro Wrestling Noah can be, right up there with Stardom and right up there to be not quite New Japan, big, but that's the company that you should, pay attention to.
Yes, that's interesting because I feel like they have amazing talent on their roster up and down, you know, like just wrestling wise. Kaito,
if they utilize it, you know.
Yeah, and that's really the problem with them, just me as a viewer. I don't know if they've done a great job with a lot of their talent.
Yeah, because you got the Kazuyuki Fujita or Sakuraba or Masakatsu Funaki from Pancras and all these great talent from, like, you know, from 90s, all the legends, right? They should be putting today's superstar over, huh?
Yeah, I mean, that's traditional thinking, but...
Yeah, but that hasn't happened yet.
Yes, exactly.
Kiyomiya is good. The Shiozaki is good. Kenwo is good.
Yes, all great wrestlers.
Yeah, so they just... The production and the way they do the programming and the storyline, you know, if they change it a little bit, it can be a force. Yeah.
And I think that would be very
useful. Potential.
Oh yes, potential.
Old Japan Pro Wrestling has English commentary, English play by play, and move into, you know, more of a streaming service. That can be something too.
Yeah. Oh, that is true. But in Noah, I feel like
Kento Miyahara is a great champion.
Oh yeah, with All Japan, we'll talk about him in a second. But Noah, I just feel like a lot of times another thing that really annoys me when I watch them as a fan, because you remember the old days of Noah. It's like the junior heavyweights were so strong, and nowadays it feels like we see recently the title changing hands a bunch with. You know, Dante Leon winning the title, somebody from Indies in America. I think, wow, the junior title scene doesn't feel as strong as it used to. I feel like they used to have many strong challengers, and even the talent is there. You have Kotage, Harada, like, you know, great performers, but for some reason, it feels like they haven't quite gotten the junior division very well. We saw earlier, remember that Sumo Hall show? It wasn't very successful, the all junior show, you know, at the end of the Sumo Hall, you know, a very disappointing number there.
Right.
Why do you think that is, that they have really let the junior division slide so much, it feels like?
Well, because wrestling is still heavyweight division.
Oh, yeah, that's true. And you're always going to deal with that. Even in New Japan, I think the juniors will always be second fiddle, kind of. Even
a little bit,
Yeah, you're right. You're totally right on that, actually. But, you know, the one good thing about them is we've seen this Muto Road. Yeah. They feel like they've done a great job in terms of they've got all of their eggs in their basket for this Muto Dome show. You're seeing Nakamura come in.
Sure.
You know, like they're really...
Sting.
Yes, Sting. It's like they're not half-assing this. You know, it's like we're going to go all the way with this and make this the biggest deal. What's your vibe? Because me and Striga had a little debate on this on the last show, on the Muto Dome show. I think it's going to be huge success, personally.
Yeah, oh, huge success.
Yeah, like,
it's like right after he left, what are you going to do?
And that's the problem. That's another thing we talked about, because I said, to me, just as a viewer, again, this is no inside information or anything like that, just me as a viewer, I feel like Noah has lost a little bit of its identity over the years. Like, it's a company kind of in transitional phase now, because they haven't really been able to utilize the veterans very well to influence the new guys. And now, Muto gone, where will they go? It's like they don't have an identity now. You know,
well, make Kiyomiya into Okada is the only way.
See, now that's what I said. You know, you look at all the aces. I mean, we talked about Kento and All Japan, even down to DDT, you know, Konosuke Takeshita.
Oh, he's like, exceptional.
Yeah, amazing wrestler, but they use him like an Okada level star. They treat him like a star. And Noah,
but then again, if you remember 10 years ago, you know, when Okada came up, it wasn't as good. So you gotta be patient a little bit.
That's true. And I think, like, if you just want to talk about wrestling, like in the ring, wrestler, Kaito is ahead of where Okada was 10 years ago. Just a pure wrestler.
But he just doesn't have the star power. And that's where we're going to have to leave off with here, because if he can get that, I think the whole company will be better for it. So that said, I know you got to get going, Fumi, and I'm going to have to say goodbye. Sorry to cut it short to all the listeners out there, but Fumi, he has to do an interview. He's got to go. And I know that he's going to be back on for another episode. We're going to do it talking about some other companies next time. It'll be very soon, too, not nearly as long as this time. So with that said, I'm going to let you get out of here, Fumi. Thank you so much for coming on. Thank you to all the listeners for checking it out. Check out Fumi's shows. Write That Down with Justin Nipper, Pacific Rim with Jim Valley, that's my guy, big love to him, and check us out on Twitter at Eastern Lariat, check him out, Fumihiko Dayo, me, Viva_Zero, and until next time, you take it away, Fumi.
So long from Tokyo.
Sayonara.
This is David Nick. Listen to the bid. Bring a pie, how talking you want a bread. Bring a pie, how want it. I'm a young thing to tell the rest of the world. You can't see the little sense of evil. That's just a bit of a love.